It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, summer is a time for fun, but it's also a great opportunity to start some projects you've been putting off all year or creative endeavors you've been waiting for inspiration to strike. Email us about your summer project plans. You can do it now at ideas@wpr.org. First, it's high school and college graduation season, a time when many students finally achieve that goal they've been working so hard for. And for the rest of us, there's no shortage of goals in life, a promotion at work, the completion of a major project, even getting married. Whatever the goal, we often tell ourselves that reaching it will make our lives better and bring us happiness. But what if after hitting that goal, you realize it wasn't all it was cracked up to be? Well, that happens a lot, and it has a name. Our next guest is here to talk about the arrival fallacy, how it plays out in our lives, and how we can think about goals and achievements differently in a way that hopefully makes us happier. Tal Ben-Shahar is an author and lecturer who specializes in positive psychology. He's written several books about happiness, including Happier and Being Happy. Tal, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Great to be on your show.
Well, give us a description of this concept of the arrival fallacy. What is it?
Yeah, so the arrival fallacy is a very common illusion that actually most people entertain, and that is that when they will arrive, when they will reach a milestone, when they will achieve a goal, when they will get that promotion or that raise or find that person, then they'll be happy. And then they get there and they realize very quickly that it was an illusion. They're not there yet. And then, of course, they go on to the next hope, the next illusion, and on ad infinitum.
What is it that makes us less happy? Are we just dumb to begin with and think that good thing is better than it is? Or is there something about not having a goal and not knowing what to do with ourselves?
Yeah, so here is the thing. You know, there are essentially two schools of thought. One school of thought says it's all about the goals. You know, achieve your goals, fulfill your dreams, and then you'll be happy. The other goal says, you know, that's an illusion. It's not about the goal. It's about being in the present. And both are right, partially, because we do need a goal. There are very few people who can lead a full and fulfilling life without having an objective, a goal, something to strive for. At the same time, very few people, if any, will be happy just by achieving that goal. In other words, it's neither all about achieving the goal, neither it is just about enjoying the present. It's about finding some combination of the two, and most of us fail to do so.
How can we do better at that, at not deferring our happiness till later, but you're not going too far in the other direction and not having any goals at all?
Yeah. So first of all, it's about realizing that goals are important, central. You know, we are future-oriented beings. We do need something to strive for. At the same time, so having that goal is important. At the same time, we shouldn't delude ourselves and say that our happiness is contingent on the attainment of the goal. It's not. So having a goal is important, and yet realizing that the most important element of happiness or the antecedent of happiness is actually the journey on the way to that destination.
Tal Ben-Shahar is with us. He's the author of books including Happier and Being Happy. We're talking about what's called the arrival fallacy, the idea that, hey, when I hit this milestone, the new job or promotion, retirement, what have you, graduation, then I'm going to be happy. It turns out doesn't usually pan out that way. There's a sense of letdown, of disappointment. Tal, can that letdown be dangerous? I've heard, especially when we're talking about retirement, the person thinking, when I'm retired, when I'm done with the rat race, then I'm going to be happy. That can be a really serious letdown, maybe even with health consequences.
Yes, very much so. So we know, I mean, most people know of stories of people who were even close to them, who came to retirement, who had been waiting for retirement for so many years, and then they get there, and what happens? They suddenly develop illnesses, depression, so mental as well as physical illnesses. We also see it elsewhere. So we see very often among celebrities, among very famous, very successful people who fall into depression, who go into drugs, alcohol, sometimes suicide. And that is for a similar reason. You see, because many of these people grow up unhappy or not particularly happy. And then they're constantly told, don't worry, when you make it, then you'll be happy. In other words, when you become rich, famous, successful, then this unhappiness will be over. And they make it. And they are initially very happy, in fact, when they arrive, when they have all the money that they want, when they can have any relationship they want, when they are famous and admired. But then after 3 months or 6 months or a year, they realize that there is no there there, meaning they get there and they go back to where they were before as unhappy as they were before. Only this time, they don't have the illusion that when they make it, then they'll be happy. And you know, the difference between sadness and depression is that depression is sadness without hope. And they have no hope because they realize that they can't find that happiness in anything which is in their reality. So they look for answers outside of reality, and outside of reality, drugs, alcohol, or the ultimate exit, which is suicide.
Tal, let's turn our attention to those graduates I mentioned earlier, people just out of high school or maybe just out of college now. How do they set themselves up to not have the arrival fallacy? How do they set up goals that will make them happy instead of goals that create unrealistic expectations?
Yeah, it's a very important question. And the answer is, unfortunately, that it's very difficult. And it's very difficult because in our culture, we're primed towards the arrival fallacy. So, you know, for years, you know, my daughter has just entered middle school. They're already talking about getting into a top college with her. So everything is geared towards when you make it, then you'll be happy, whether it's the explicit message or the implicit message, because it's so important to get there. So whether as parents or teachers or as a 12-year-old girl, you need to understand that the secret to happiness is not the achievement. It's not the arrival. Yes, of course, I'm all for being ambitious and for hard work. However, the benefit, the real benefit of hard work is the work itself. The real benefit of ambition is the excitement that you feel as you're being ambitious towards that goal, not the achievement of that goal.
Is part of the secret to have multiple goals going on at a time so that just because we've reached one of them, we aren't left drifting aimlessly?
Good. Yes. Yeah. So there are a few things we can do. First of all, it's really to have a few goals so that we're not empty once we achieve something. And the other thing to do is expectations. You know, expectations are very important. For example, if I expect to, to meet my Prince Charming, my princess, and then live happily ever after, I'm going to be disappointed. I'm going to be frustrated. And it's going to hurt the relationship as well. If I expect the next promotion to make me happy, I'll be disappointed. So to have realistic expectations. The other very important thing is once we achieve that goal, to accept the fact that there is going to be a letdown. Once again, related to expectations, it's natural to feel a low after a high. And that's okay. And if we expect it and we accept it, it's not going to impact us in too harsh a way.
Is pop culture just setting us up for failure here? Because all the movies just about end with we just defeated the evil empire or got married or whatever, and then we have happily ever after. We don't see that post goal achievement stage.
Yes, exactly right. And we see it especially, as you alluded to, in relationships. You see, the problem is that movies end where love begins. It's after they walk into the sunset. That's when the real work begins. You know, the analogy that we can use here is, you know, we go to work and we come, you know, we finally, after years and years of looking, we find our dream job. Now, imagine if we find our dream job and on the first day, we just sit down and revel in finding our dream job and do nothing about it. You know, we'll be fired before we know it. It's the hard work begins once we found the dream job. Why not when we find our dream relationship? Why not start working hard then? And once again, it's a manifestation of the arrival fallacy. We arrived, we got there, and now we can live happily ever after. Not at all. That is when the work begins. And now it doesn't have to be painful work. No, again, the journey is the essence, not the arriving at the destination.
We're talking right now about arrival fallacy with Tal Ben-Shahar. He's an author and lecturer who specializes in positive psychology and happiness. We're looking at why hitting our goals, a career goal, life goal, love goal, whatever, doesn't always lead to the happiness we expect. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been there? Have you experienced this arrival fallacy, achieving that goal, personal or professional, only to feel let down, aimless maybe, afterwards? Do you wish you could have done things differently? Or have you found a better way, a way to set those goals in a way that keeps you doing cool stuff and happy while you're on the way? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Tal Ben-Shahar. He's an author and lecturer who specializes in positive psychology. We're looking at arrival fallacy, why arriving at our goals has the potential to make us unhappy, and what we can do about it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you find yourself achieving one of your goals in life only to find out it wasn't all it was cracked up to be? So how did that make you feel? How did you work through that? Do we put too much pressure on our achievements? Is there a better way to approach goal setting? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Mosinee. Jeff, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Jeff?
Yeah, I think one of the problems with people when they hit their goals, they're not satisfied, is maybe they're setting hollow goals. They need to think about how they're going to feel when they reach their goal and why it's going to make them happy.
Is this something you've tried in your own life, Jeff?
Well, like, for instance, losing weight. I lost 60 pounds once, and I didn't really feel any different, you know? Once I got there, it wasn't just a number.
Huh. Did you set a new goal then, or how did you get through that?
I just kept on doing what I was doing, to be honest.
All right. Jeff, thanks a lot for sharing that story. Weight loss, another good example. Tal, do we need to think a little more deeply about what our goals are and what we're hoping to get out of them?
Yeah, no, this is great, Jeff. One other thing that I would add to that, in addition to thinking hard, talk to other people who have achieved goals. You know, talk to people who are close to you, mentors, family members, because we are not always good at predicting how happy or unhappy will be. So there's wonderful research by Daniel Gilbert from Harvard on effective forecasting. And what he shows is, for example, that professors believe that once they get tenure, then they'll be happy for the rest of their lives. And again, they arrive there, they make it there, and very quickly they go back to where they were before, as happy or as unhappy as they were before. You know, lottery winners very quickly go back to where they were before, emotionally speaking. So we're not very good at predicting. So two things. One, you know, speak to other people. And two, really look within. Is this something that's very important for me? How is it going to change my life if I do arrive there? In what meaningful ways, if at all?
Well, one thought on what Jeff did. Okay, he hit that 60-pound weight loss, a pretty big deal for a lot of folks. Maybe a goal might have not been the number, but what can I do in my life that I can't do now at this higher weight? Like some way of not just hitting that goal, but how does my life change? What do I do with that? Is that a way to advance ourselves a little bit?
Yes, exactly. Which applies, by the way, to many other areas. So for example, retirement. What am I going to do once I retire? Or if I do get this promotion, what am I going to do differently in this new position at work? And once we can connect again to the journey after that arrival, that can change our experience of the arrival.
Jeff, thanks for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Judy in Waukesha. Judy, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Judy?
Well, I'm 75. I'm bringing up my grandchildren who are 17 and 20 right now. And I've had them for 13 years because their mother died, and they don't have a father in the picture at all. And they had quite an eventful child. was quite violent and so on. But right now, one is in the upper 1%, and she has studied so much that she had to get stop and take a gap year and get more stable. And the other one doesn't like to study at all, so he has crummy grades, most of them. And it's really hard. I don't think they even know what goals are. And we're just so different. It's so hard to bring them up. Do you have any suggestions?
Judy, thanks for the call. And I know we'd probably need a lot more info to give super personal advice there. But for kids who grew up in trauma, any thoughts on happiness and goals, Tal?
Yeah. So, Judy, thank you for this question. You know, it is important for kids to find something that they are passionate about. And I think the best thing we can do for children is to expose them to different things, because they may not be passionate about, you know, studying hard for a math exam or an English exam, but they may be very passionate about birds, or they may be very passionate about food. And we need to help them identify what it is that they're passionate about. And once we do, to go with them. You know, the key for children is to experience quality in anything that they do. It could be paper mache, it could be sport, it could be something academic. But let them experience quality. In other words, find something that they're passionate about and then invest their time and effort there. And this is our most important role as educators, to help them do that. Again, we do need a goal, but it really doesn't matter where that goal is, of course, as long as it's not hurtful to them or others. It doesn't matter what that goal is, but we need to help them find something.
Judy, thanks so much for your call. Best to you with your work as a grandma and to your grandkids as well. We are talking about the arrival fallacy, what happens when we meet our goals and we're not as happy as we thought we would be. Tal Ben-Shahar is with us. He's the author of books including Happier and Being Happy. Back to your calls now. Catherine is with us in Green Bay. Catherine, hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi, what did you want to share with us, Catherine?
I am 54 years old. I've been a truck driver. I drive over the road, which means I go all over the United States. And I had trouble figuring out what I wanted to do after working in the industry, the restaurant industry for 25 years and the education system for 15 years. And while I was doing both of those jobs, I had both of those jobs at the same time always. So I was always trying to make ends meet, but I found out that I was a people pleaser. And it was exhausting me. So I thought to myself, well, what can I do? What do I love to do on my day off? And I used to get in my car and drive as far as I could. And I loved being over on the road. So I thought to myself, wow, I wonder if I could be a truck driver. And then I did it, and I'm making more money than I've ever made. I've become a stronger person, more confident person. I have less issues with people, because I've had to weed those things out in my life. I used to get taken advantage of all the time for my money or for my time, and it was exhausting. And it would get to the point in some of my jobs that I would be like, I don't know if I can do this anymore.
Catherine, thank you so much for sharing your story. And it sounds like Tal, in a lot of ways, she did it right. She didn't just think, once I switch careers, I'm going to be happy. She said, hey, wait, why don't I find a career that involves the things that already make me happy?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's also related to what Judy asked before. It's about, whether it's with children or adults, it's about finding something that we're passionate about doing on a day-to-day, not something that we think will be happy when we make it. And also, it's a wonderful metaphor. It's driving. It's all about the journey.
Thank you so much for the call. I think we have time for one more caller. Michael is with us in Madison. Michael, hello.
Hi. For years and years and years, I fell into the trap of thinking, if only I, you know, can get this, if I can get the girl, I will be happy. If I can have a certain drink, I'll be happy. If I have a certain job, I'll be happy. If I have a certain amount of money, I'll be happy. I found one night I made a sale, and I made $5,000 on one sale, and it didn't make me happy at all. And I found out that I can be happy no matter what circumstance I'm in. And it doesn't have anything to do with the goal. It all comes from within.
Michael, thanks for that call. Happiness comes within, from within, Tal, but I don't know, maybe easier said than done?
Yeah, it is easier said than done. And you know what Michael was talking about and what Catherine was talking about is that happiness is not about making it to the peak of the mountain, you know, achieving that goal. At the same time, it's not about climbing aimlessly around the mountain. Happiness is the experience of climbing towards the peak. So yes, have a peak, have a goal, and then enjoy the experience, the day-to-day, the journey, the experience of it all.
Michael, thanks for sharing that. I'm glad you're finding what you need to be happy. That's great. Tal, in our last minute or so, for people who haven't gotten to where he's gotten, how do we start? How do we start reshaping the way we think of our life goals?
Yeah, so first of all, experiment. Realize that, you know, as Mahatma Gandhi called his autobiography, my experiments with truth, not my arrival at truth, not my finding truth, my experiment with truth. So experiment, try things out, and have realistic expectations. You know, life is about ups and downs, difficulties, hardships, as well as joy and excitement. And when our expectations are realistic and when we try things, we arrive at higher levels of happiness than we expect.
Tal, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Tal Ben-Shahar, author and lecturer who specializes in positive psychology. He's written several books about happiness, including Happier and Being Happy. He joins us today to talk about what's called the arrival fallacy, how we can avoid unhappiness when we reach our goals in life, in our careers, whatever. Summer has arrived. That means maybe having some more space or time for projects you've been putting off.
Come on over here, Ron. Let me show you what I'm doing. Taking advantage of some of the time off to add a whole new wing on here. I'm going to rip these walls out and, of course, rewire it.
Yeah, you're going to make it all 220?
Yeah, 220, 221, whatever it takes.
Michael Keaton there from the 1983 movie Mr. Mom, talking to Martin Mull about doing some home remodeling with newfound free time. Enough Michael Keaton, we want to hear from you. What summer project or projects are you getting ready to kick off? Whether it's a big remodel or some artistic project, writing that novel, whatever you're working on this summer, tell us about it right now. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll go right to your calls now. Matthew starts us off in Pleasant Prairie. Matthew, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you got going on this summer, Matthew?
My grandpa lives a mile down the road, and he's been a farmer his whole life. He's 87, so he's not doing so much, but he's let me take his chicken coop. So I'm going to relocate it in my yard.
Okay, and you're going to raise chickens there?
Yeah, and apparently some ducks. My wife sprung that on me yesterday.
She's adding ducks to the equation. So
Two ducks, yep.
How big a project is this going to be?
We'll find out this weekend. I don't know how much I can keep. Obviously, I'll keep as much as I can, but there's going to be some rework, and who knows what's going to happen when it travels down the road, too.
Do you have a deadline in mind?
No deadline. Nope. Before the snow.
I think that's probably a great call. Matthew, thank you so much for starting us off. Good luck moving that chicken coop. Now, how about you? 800-642-1234 is the number. Tell us what project you have in the works this summer. Mike joins us next in Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. How you guys doing?
Good. What do you got in the works, Mike?
Got in the works. Well, I'm kind of doing this project with my mother, but we are actually doing about 12 different kinds of heirloom tomatoes this year.
12 different kinds of heirlooms?
Yep. We've got some that are supposed to grow to about a pound and a quarter to a pound and a half, three or four different kinds of cherry tomatoes. Just kind of interesting what, you know, it was out there like 100 years ago compared to what we have now in the stores.
There's some tasty heirloom tomatoes out there, Mike, right?
Yes, there is. Absolutely. That and also my little girl's coming down from Michigan for the summer, so be an interesting project for her to help out with as well.
Some free labor there. And what's the goal for all the tomatoes? Just eating them or salsa, canning? What do you got?
Eat them, can them, store them, I'll figure out things.
All right, we'll have you on Food Friday later in the summer and get a report. Mike, thanks a lot.
Here, have a nice day, guys.
Now, how about you? What is your summer project? Call in at 800-642-1234. Let us know. It could be an outdoor project. Could be something with family, as we heard from both of our callers so far. Maybe it's something just you. It could be construction, could be gardening, could be something fun or artistic. Call in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We asked around our studios here. Lucas Johnson, Central Time Associate Producer, says this summer he's committed to improving his cooking skills, so he's not stuck rotating through the same three dishes every week. He hopes by the summer to be an expert grocery shopper instead of wandering aimlessly between the aisles. Well, we've all been there, Lucas. Central Time producer Bill Martin says he's focusing on making improvements to the outside of his house, including tackling a patch of weeds and planting lots of flowers. It's all about curb appeal, he says. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Green Bay. Jeff, hello.
Hi.
What do you got in the works this summer, Jeff?
Basement remodeling.
Ooh, big project?
Yeah, third bathroom, wet bar, full drywall, electrical, the works.
No, it's so a. Is it unfinished to start? Jeff, is it an unfinished basement at this point, like completely unfinished?
Yeah, it's completely unfinished, but there's going to be a big hole have to be cut for an egress window, too. That's
wow.
Going to be fun.
Now, do you possess the skills to do this, Jeff?
Some of them.
Well, that's some more than I do. So when are you hoping to be done with this, Jeff, this basement?
Just more living space. Particularly in the summer, it's a lot cooler down there.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe stay out of the AC a little bit more.
All right, Jeff, invite us to your inaugural basement party. Thanks for coming in, calling in. We'll go now to Jimmy in Dundee, Illinois. Jimmy, hi.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good. What are you working on this summer?
Oh, lots of farm projects. I work full-time at a farm in Dundee, Illinois, where I work livestock and vegetable production. And I'm also starting my own small farm operation business. And I have about a half acre in Hebron, Illinois, that I'm working for that private operation.
Wow. Okay. So I'm not imagining a lot of spare time on your hands here, Jimmy, but
what
are your priorities for your own farm this summer?
I'm sorry?
What are your priorities on your own farm this summer?
I've got a 10-member CSA that I'm going to be growing for, so really just making sure that I have 20 weeks of awesome produce for my shareholders. So they'll get a box for me every other week and then for 20 weeks, and that's going to be starting probably July 20th or so. I'm about 4 weeks behind due to all the weather.
I'm
just looking to start up probably the 22nd of June, but as we've all seen, we've got a lot of water to deal with still.
All right, Jimmy, good luck. Hope things dry out for you. We'll go to another caller now at 800-642-1234 as we talk about our summer plans. Todd is with us in Cadott. Todd, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, what are we working on there, Todd?
We're going to be, now that we got some of the landscaping and gardening done, we're going to be tackling our bedroom and ripping out the carpet that's in the bedroom and putting in some new hardwood flooring.
All right, was the carpet there when you moved in, Todd?
We built the house, and
okay.
It's been about 14 years, so it's gotten its running of three boys.
Okay, that sounds good. And this just you and the family are doing this, a home project?
Yep, just me and my wife.
All right, good luck, Todd, replacing the rug with some hardwood floors. Back to your – actually, let's take a look at Mark Rickers, who works on To the Best of Our Knowledge. He has a summer goal. I like this one, tearing down an old bike frame and rebuilding it as a single-speed winter warrior commuter. Place he's going to build some raised garden beds and figure out how to install a paver patio. That's a lot. Back to your calls. Rick is with us now on the line from Wausau. Rick, hi.
Hi.
What's your project this summer, Rick?
I'm starting some, growing some hops. I put in some 25-foot poles, three of them, and they're 30 feet apart. And I got the wire up, and I got my runners down, and I started my plants about a week and a half ago. My son has a good friend in Madison that started a craft brewery, and he said there might be some opportunity to get rid of some of those in the fall. And I know I won't get a crop this year that'll be worth anything, but in the near future, hopefully I can get it to be successful.
Have you ever grown hops before, Rick, or are you coming into this as a rookie?
I'm coming into this as a rookie. I remember hearing something on Garden Talk or one of your programs about it about a year or so ago, and I really didn't have plans for it until my son called. I had some opportunity to get some poles for a very inexpensive, just a haul. I got some wire from that same project. They're redoing a lot of the public service lines up here, and they were throwing the stuff away, and I thought it'd be a great opportunity. One of the things I did is I dug the holes with my skid steer, and if you want to see why women live longer than men, you see a guy taking a skid steer with forks trying to put a 25-foot pole in a hole by himself.
All right. Well, be careful out there with those hops, Rick, and good luck with your crop. We'll go now to Cindy in Appleton. Cindy, hello.
Hello. Well, my project this summer is to get my financial affairs in order because September 1st, I'm retiring.
All right. Congratulations. Now, we just heard about goal setting and, you know, not being disappointed when you hit this goal. What are your plans to be happy when you're retired, Cindy?
Travel.
Nice. All right. Well, good luck this summer getting things ready for your retirement travels. Time for one more call, I think. Pat is with us in Three Lakes. Pat, hello.
Hi. Yeah, my wife and I ran three businesses over the years, and we decided to sell two of them. So I think what I'm going to do this summer is study to get a real estate broker's license. I was a real estate appraiser for about 8 years, 10 years, and a property tax assessor. So I have some experience in that. Plus, I'm not doing anything. And my daughter would like to own business, and I also have a cousin that is really interested in it, too. So anyway.
All right. Well, good luck getting that real estate broker's license, Pat. Thanks for all of your calls. A couple more from around the studios. Susanna Michaels here with our membership team says every summer she plans to make a will, but this summer she's finally going to do it. Shouldn't take the whole summer, Susanna. You can get that done, I think. And our producer, Dean Canetter on Central Time, he's into that geocaching that the kids are doing these days. He's hoping to scour the Madison area for every last cache in the area this summer. Thank you so much, everybody, for calling in. Good luck with your summer goals, whatever they are. In clips released from a television interview this week, President Trump said that if a foreign government offered him compromising information on a candidate running against him, he would consider taking it. During the 2016 presidential race, key members of the Trump campaign held a meeting with a Russian lawyer who had promised info that was part of that country's support for his candidacy. The president has denied he knew about that meeting. Trump, in an interview, was asked by George Stephanopoulos of ABC about how he would react if approached again by a foreign government. Here's part of that exchange.
Let's put yourself in a position. You're a congressman. Somebody comes up and says, hey, I have information on your opponent. Do you call the FBI?
I don't think it's coming from Russia, you do.
I've seen a lot of things over my life. I don't think in my whole life I've ever called the FBI. In my whole life. You don't call the FBI. You throw somebody out of your office. You do whatever
you do. Al Gore got a stolen briefing book. He called the FBI.
Well, that's different. A stolen briefing book. This isn't a stolen. This is somebody that said, we have information on your opponent. Oh, let me call the FBI. Give me a break. Life doesn't work that way.
The FBI director says that's what should happen.
The FBI director is wrong.
Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and chair of the Department of History, Political Science, and Religious Studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me today, Rob.
A lot in these comments and others from that interview. What has jumped out to you about what you've heard from the president in this interview?
Well, what jumped out at me is the fact that the president basically said that he wouldn't call the FBI, that that's not what should be done, and that an approach from a foreign government to a sitting elected official or really, you know, any individual who may have confidential information is a kind of form of espionage and possibly also, you know, compromising situation. And that's kind of what jumped out at me when I first read the quote, and I've read, you know, a little bit more about it and seen the clip a couple of times now.
Now that, as we heard there, the president disagreeing with the FBI director, Christopher Wray, his appointee after he fired former director James Comey, the current FBI director saying, yes, you absolutely should go to the FBI with this kind of foreign approach, offering information like this. Is that something that has been seen as a norm in American politics?
Yeah, I mean, it's a norm in terms of also our elections, because the concern is foreign interference also within the elections themselves, either at the presidential level or at other levels. If you have foreign governments or individuals sort of coming to you as an elected or a candidate and saying, hey, I've got some stuff for you. The question is, you know, why are they approaching you? What do they want? And it becomes this question of who is supporting your candidacy, particularly if it's a foreign entity. All the way back to the time when the founders were writing the Constitution and discussing these were particular issues that they were extremely concerned about. Hamilton writes about this in Federalist 68 and Federalist 75. There was a lot of discussion at that Constitutional Convention about having foreign interference in the election of American officials and how to prevent it.
I'll give a little more of a listen to that interview between George Stephanopoulos of ABC and President Trump, more on this idea that this is similar to opposition research that happens in elections. Here's a listen.
If somebody called from a country, Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI if I thought there was something wrong. But when somebody comes up with oppo research, right, they come up with oppo research. Oh, let's call the FBI. The FBI doesn't have enough agents to take care of it. But you go and talk honestly to congressmen. They all do it. They always have. And that's the way it is. It's called oppo research.
Is this different than oppo research, opposition research, that if it's coming from foreign governments or their agents?
Well, again, it's where the source is and what does that foreign entity then want in the offer of this kind of information? Yes, opposition research is absolutely the norm in contemporary modern elections. Most people running for office will have somebody on their campaign staff who is designated to pursue opposition research. Oftentimes it's somebody on the campaign and you don't go out sort of asking for other people to get it for you, or you contract for it. But you also, generally speaking, don't look to receive it from foreign governments, because again, what does a foreign government want in exchange for giving you this kind of research?
This all comes at a time after the Mueller report has come out, and as House Democrats on committees are conducting investigations related to the Mueller probe, there's talk about impeachment. Can you put the president's statements here in context of all the stuff that we just went through in the Mueller probe?
Well, and again, the Mueller probe, or the Mueller report, is 400 pages long, and some people have read it and some people haven't read it, but a lot of what was found in that research was that there was in fact some foreign engagement and entanglement in our election, and that it's something that our intelligence agencies have also been talking about, and that members of Congress have also been concerned about, and that it's something that we need to prevent in order for our elections to actually be legitimate. If there is, you know, sort of more engagement by foreign entities in our elections, then voters tend to think that, in fact, the election process itself is corrupt. And that makes the elections and those who are elected by those elections less legitimate in the eyes of their constituents.
Talking to Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha, about President Trump's statements in an interview released last night, saying he'd be open to accepting dirt from foreign governments about political opponents, saying he might or might not report that kind of offer to the FBI. Lily, some of the president's defenders, even some like Lindsey Graham, who have criticized this particular statement, have said, but what about the compilation of the Steele dossier? Democrats and initially Republicans had hired this investigator, a foreign person, to collect information. Other people saying, wait, this is different. You are allowed to hire people to collect information. This is stuff being offered for free by foreign governments. Can you compare and contrast for us?
And that's sort of what I was saying before, is that, as I said, most people who are running for office in the United States will either have somebody on their staff doing the opposition research, or they will contract for it to be done by political operatives. And again, that's sort of what is the kind of the norm. And to some degree, that's partially what I think Trump was inferring in his statement, like everybody does opposition research, which is true. The difference, I think, is that if you're welcoming a foreign country to give you opposition research, again, you have that question of like, where is this coming from? Why are you giving it to me? And am I going to owe you something for that? And is there then potentially foreign interference in American elections?
Are there going to be consequences here for the president? What could those consequences be for making these statements?
Well, I mean, again, there's this discussion about whether or not saying something like that is potentially a violation of the oath of office, which the president swore to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and to protect the Constitution and the country from enemies, foreign and domestic. And so in that regard, is this a potential violation or somehow abrogation of that responsibility as president?
What do you make of what you've seen from members of Congress in response to this so far, just a day after these comments came out?
Well, Lindsey Graham, who has been a big supporter in the last year and a half of the president, was one of the people who said, that's probably not really the best thing to have said. And there have been some, you know, somewhat muted responses from Republicans in the Senate. Obviously, the you know, sort of the partisan divide. We've had speeches on the House floor by Nancy Pelosi and in the Senate floor from Chuck Schumer. So the Speaker of the House and the minority leader in the Senate, who are both Democrats, have come out strongly against these essentially this kind of approach to foreign engagement in American elections. So you've seen it break down along somewhat traditional and typical party lines.
In our last minute, Lily, is this something that could affect voters, or are those partisan lines already set so firmly that it's not going to sway people on either side?
I don't know if it will sway people on either side, but it may, again, contribute to the potential for having voters on both sides think that the elections themselves are not necessarily legitimate. And that if there's a foreign engagement that's mucking around in American elections, you know, what's the outcome of that for that foreign power? What do they potentially want? And will policies coming out of the White House, say, favor or engage a particular foreign power in ways that they wouldn't if this didn't come from a foreign power?
We'll leave it there for now. Lily, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Lily Gorin is a professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha. She was with us to talk about President Trump's comments in part of an interview released by ABC, where he said he would consider accepting information about his political opponents from foreign governments, and where he said he might or might not report those approaches of foreign governments with that kind of information to the FBI, plus a look at some of the congressional reaction to those statements. There is a moon mystery a-brewing. According to new research published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters, there's a big chunk of something below the surface of the moon's south pole, like 180 miles below. It's under a big basin where there was believed to be a huge impact billions of years ago. That basin is the largest known impact crater right now in the whole solar system. Why do scientists think there's something heavy down there? They're using info from a detailed new gravity map of the moon. The map shows there's something really massive under the moon's south pole, so massive that it actually distorts the shape of the moon. So what is it? Two theories. One, it could be a dense piece of the original core of the moon, or theory two, it could be a remnant of whatever smashed into the moon billions of years ago. Who's up for a field trip to find out? Let's split up and look for clues. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. That's the moon in the sky.